Hi everyone, and thank you very much for joining us on a special episode of Lit Publishing's podcast, Lit Radio. I am today joined by Dr. Yuan Ding. Thank you very much for taking the time.
Thank you.
And it's an absolute pleasure to have you join us and take time of your busy schedule today. Mm-hmm. And of course, he is Vice President and Dean of Cathay Capital Chair, Professor in Accounting and CEIBS. He is member of the European Accounting Association, French Accounting Association, and American Accounting Association. Mm-hmm. And he's joining us today to talk about, well, a lot of the future in business, how things are going to change, and what role does China play in all of this? And let's start today's conversation, Doctor, by asking you, what do you think are the key challenges Chinese companies have encountered when it comes to globalization and their strategy?
Okay, so I think the key problem or the key challenges they have is related to the lack of experience. And they're moving out of a country where you feel a sort of a monoculture, and then a deep dive into a very unknown world for them. So I think the lack of experience is a big shortage for many of these talent, or also the people who can handle this complex situation.
Mm, absolutely. And when it comes to the difference between China's path towards globalization and that of established enterprises within the West, Europe and America, you know, what is the big difference there?
Yeah. And I think the big difference is that the motivation, the fundamental motivation for most of the moves are quite different. If you look at the Western world, especially from Europe, and many companies try to become global or multinational to seek the new market. Because you can see not only in UK, but also in France or Germany, or even worse in Switzerland, the domestic market is very limited. Mm. So as a company, if you gain strength with your brand, organizational capacity, suitable products or service, you have to move beyond your border in order to obtain the sizable market. So many of the globalization we describe in the literature about the multinationals are for the market-seeking purpose. However, if you see many of the Chinese companies moving out of China for the recent past, I would say, 4 or 5 years, most of them are very unknown from outside China, even inside China. So when they go outside, actually their brand is weak, the brand awareness is very weak, and even the organizational capacity is weak. But they want to do global. The goal is really not to seek for new market, but try to bring some precious element back to China in order to better compete in China. So these precious elements can be brand or technology, R&D capacity, so this kind of know-how. So it's more like intangible. Mm-hmm. So it's really to support the Chinese market. So it's something we call the resource-seeking strategy in opposition of the market-seeking strategy I just mentioned.
Yeah, absolutely. And in your opinion, what do you think are the core lessons to be learned from the global approach that's already adopted by Chinese companies?
Mm-hmm. I think the first of all, we look at the trend and the projection. And I think this current phenomenon is here and to stay, because Chinese is becoming a huge economy because of the strategic needs, as I described. So the Chinese company will come anyway. And if you look at the percentage-wise of Chinese outflow of investment over Chinese GDP, and you will see actually even when China reached the level of $200 billion in 2016, it was merely 14-15% of the market share of the global cross-border investment, which merely the Chinese GDP percentage over the world GDP. So which means in the coming 20-30 years, you will see on average every year between $100 billion to $200 billion outflow from China. It will be a normal situation. So, and another thing is that, of course, as I said, there was a shortage of experience. By making errors, unfortunately, having some success, the Chinese company will learn very quickly and make the deals and the integrations more successful.
Yeah, and that's fascinating, because I'm really interested by the light touch strategy. Yeah. So can you perhaps tell us what does it consist of? Mm. And why have most Chinese companies decided to pursue it? Why is it so important?
Okay, so the light touch strategy is linked to the motivation, the target, and the reality. The motivation of Chinese company, as I mentioned, is mainly to grab some resources that they can apply in China. As I said, most of the resources are intangibles. Intangibles, they are like glasses. It's very fragile. So if you want to use the, instead of light touch, you use heavy hand and easy to break, right? These kind of resources. So this is one thing. The second thing is the organizational capacity and the availability of Chinese talent who can manage this kind of multicultural cross-border operations. So they have very limited experience. So if you try to do something with the unsuitable talent, then the risk is much higher. And also, the important thing is that the core competence for the future growth are relying on the foreign teams that Chinese company will acquire, both for the brand management, technology management, R&D management. So if you don't treat these people well, these people will leave. So if you combine all that issues, the best way is to be patient and to use the light touch and try to find an organization and a structure which will support a mutual growth, both favorable to the foreign acquired company and the acquirer based in China.
And we've had a lot of different political turmoil, we've had a lot of different things happen all at the same time.
Yeah.
And recent political events, such as, of course, here in the UK, we are going through the Brexit,
yeah.
And of course, the election of Donald Trump,
yeah.
Policy making, has all had an impact within the global market,
yeah.
And China as well, in one way or another.
Yeah.
What is the Chinese approach to all this and the global expansion that happens for it?
Okay, so I think this is giving some quite harsh lessons to the Chinese decision makers. And let them rethink about their strategy. Because as you know, China was welcomed by the world when they opened the door and admitted into the into the global game rules and tried to, and the Chinese had a lot of advantage out of that. However, now the foreign countries, the partners, will see China with a different eye because they treat China as an equal partner. So which means when you are equal partner, you have to make also equal concession to do what we call the reciprocity approach. So then maybe the Chinese was not that ready back just last year or 2 years ago. They are still complaining saying that we are emerging market. Of course, that's not the reality if you look at the size and impact of China over the world. So from that point of view, these Trump squeeze on China on the trade war and also some reluctance, I don't call them a war yet, from Europe against the Chinese investment were treated like a wake-up call for Chinese to equally treat when they receive the investment from other countries. So this is one thing. The second thing is that because of the Trump hostile attitude toward China, and they're already making some negative impact on the Chinese investment in U.S. And this will basically channel more Chinese collaborations with Europe. And I see BRIC exit from a different eye. Because of the BRIC exit and the insecure approach or insecure perspectives that Brits will see in the coming years, actually they will be more willing to collaborate with Chinese investors and the partners also. So that means for Chinese and for British people, they will naturally seek more collaboration opportunities. It's happening now, and I just learned there are many, many delegations from China visiting UK recently to forge a better collaboration. So on US, clearly I see some downtrend because of the isolation and also the way to resist Chinese investment. But for Europe and for UK, between these regions and China, I see more collaboration coming.
So fascinating. And to close off, let's wrap up everything.
Yeah.
And my last question for you, Doctor, would be, what does the future hold for China? You know, wrapping everything up, what is this China's place within the global economy?
This is, of course, I would say that as my wish, because China played a very important role in the past 40 years in the change of the world, especially in the decreasing of poverty in the world, and also the moving up this 1 billion people into the middle class, even upper middle class. So now finally the whole world will enjoy the fruit from that achievement, because from a year 2018, so this year, China will become the biggest consumption market in the world with a total volume of $5.7 trillion, and this market is growing every year with 6 to 8%. So which means that in nearly 10 years, the Chinese will represent a market twice bigger than the U.S. market. So I think this is a blessing and opportunity for all the companies in China, but also out of China. Of course, China need to adjust to host in a more equal way and open way all the corporate citizens from all over the world. And of course, from these foreign corporations, they also need to study closely China, understand better China, and provide the suitable goods and services in order to cracking the Chinese market.
Right, fascinating. Well, I'd like to thank you very much for joining us, Dr.
Thank you very much.
Absolute pleasure to have you on the podcast. And of course, for those listening, please, in the description below, you can find out more information about our conversation, of course, the book. And we'd like to thank you very much for listening to us today.
Thank you. Bye-bye.